The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Back in the 1930s, FDR took the word liberal, which means small government, ability to choose your own path in life. They took the word liberal away, which removed the chair. Liberals now, classic liberals, are libertarians. But it used to mean liberal. Libertarian was liberal. And the confusion started there. I'm going to chart a course for you in the next couple of days to show you how these words are starting to be exposed for what they really are. Liberal then suddenly became progressive. Progressive now, the mask has come off. Everybody is a socialist. Well, that's because that's what progressive meant in the first place. Well, the same thing now is happening to the Republicans and to the conservatives. Conservatives. Were you actually progressives from the beginning? Which means you're a socialist. You're just the part of the Progressive Party that is rah-rah USA. Is that what you were? Because that, in the end, makes you a national socialist. Nobody wants to be a national socialist. But that is exactly the way the media is going to paint the conservatives. The conservative movement is under attack. And it is under attack, not just from the media, but it is under attack from national socialists themselves, called the alt-right. And the Republican Party must do more to distance itself from the alt-right. We must take up the mantle of being the hunters of the alt-right, to expose them in every sense of the word. If it doesn't, people like congressional candidate Arthur Jones of Illinois are going to create some really big headaches and create a new impression. And actually, Jones already is. He was on CNN this morning talking about Jews. And what did CNN do? Make sure that that was the Republican candidate. On Tuesday, Chicago Sun-Times headline, it read, Holocaust denier poised to claim GOP nomination in Illinois race for Congress. The only reason why he's poised to grab that nomination is because there's no one challenging him. How about this one from the Huffington Post? An actual Nazi is about to become the only GOP candidate in congressional race. What do these headlines seem to be saying? I'll tell you what they're saying. Republican bigots. They're now, the mask has come off, and they're running Nazis for Congress. That's what they're saying. It's not that the headlines aren't true. 70-year-old Arthur Jones is in fact a Nazi. He actually prefers to call himself a national socialist. Now, what part of the word socialist has anything to do with Tea Party or constitutionalists? It has everything to do with progressives. He's the former head of the Nazi Party, and he now heads the group called, unfortunately, for the Republicans, America First. The America First Committee. He has a section on his website claiming the Holocaust is a lie. However, the headlines are misleading because the Illinois Republican Party is not associating with Jones in any way, shape, or form. They have nothing to do with him. In fact, the GOP has issued a statement saying the Illinois Republican Party and our country have no place for Nazis like Arthur Jones. We strongly oppose his racist views and his candidacy for any public office. The headache for the Republicans is that no one has stepped up to run against Jones in the Republican primary for Illinois 3rd Congress, Congressional District. It doesn't matter if you win or not. You have to take a stand against him. Jones has tried and failed five times before to win the nomination, but he's about to become the Republican nominee by default. Jones doesn't have any Republican challengers because no Republican has won the House seat in this Democratic-dominated dominated district since 1975. But the media coverage heading into the midterm elections will not reflect the nuance of this particular situation. Arthur Jones is about to gift to the media 9 months of Republican bashing stories about how evil GOPs nominate the Nazis. Arthur Jones is an unashamed racist. He is a Nazi. He is a self-proclaimed national socialist. He says he regrets voting for Donald Trump because Trump has, quote, surrounded himself with hordes of Jews, end quote. Anyone with an ounce of common sense can easily see that this guy is a nobody and a nut job. But in our current climate, the left-wing media will have a field day tying Jones and his Nazi credentials to the Republicans, the Republican Party, Donald Trump, and you, no matter how you voted if you were a conservative. Conservatives, Republicans, you better wake up and get ahead of this PR nightmare. And for goodness sake, find someone who will challenge this guy. It's going to be easy. All you have to do is say, I'm not a Nazi.
It's Thursday, February 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So the last 2 days on television, I have been making this very point, but in a different way. And he is a good example of why I said last night on my TV show, I said this is probably the most important episode that I have done since we met during the exposés of Soros and the Tides Foundation. Because this is a global Tides Foundation, also socialist, about the conservative movement. And you can look at a guy like Jones and say, well, he's just one guy. You can look at the Nazis in Germany and say, well, it's just one group. But it's not. It is absolutely not. And Americans have got to wake up to this. And the conservatives are the only ones that are going to be able to do this. Because I'm telling you, the media already thinks, because they are all progressives. And progressives, what liberal meant was a softer word that FDR stole to try to hide the fact that they were progressives. Because Wilson scared the country so much on what progressives, he wrecked the word progressive because they realized, oh my gosh, this is one giant world order. This is communism under another name. And they did not want anything to do with it. So he took the word progressive away. I'm sorry, liberal away. And he replaced progressive with the word liberal. That's not what liberal meant, but people were comfortable with that because that's who people were. So once they discredited liberalism and everybody realized that's not what liberal is supposed to mean and it became a dirty word, they went back to the original progressive. But what is the word progressive? Why did they choose the word progressive? What are you progressing towards? Socialism. It's why now progressives are not as big as they were just 8 years ago. Notice everybody, the mask is coming off, a prediction I made years ago. The mask will come off and everybody will say, yeah, I am a socialist because you know what? This doesn't work. It's not that they're changing their mind. That's what progressive means. Socialism. And socialism in the end means total control. Whether that is a communist socialist or a national socialist. Now, the conservative movement, the conservatives were the Republicans, but Theodore Roosevelt was the one who brought the Progressive Party in the first place. So the Republicans were the first progressives. But he made sure that everybody looked at that Republican Party as a very pro-American Let me say that again. A very pro-American conservative movement. One that held up religious values and one that was strong about the country. Because the Democrats, they were all about, later, the UN. They were all about international bodies. We were about American. Well, this was the split in the 1930s that the rest of the world went through. We didn't. We lied to, our politicians lied to us. They said they were progressives and conservatives. The rest of the world in the 1930s told the truth. We're communists or we're fascists. We're communist international socialists or we're just the opposite. We're national socialists. Socialism was in both parties. One just held up the international flag, the UN. The other held up the U.S. flag. They became national socialists. Now, is that who we are? Because I do not believe that the average person, at least outside of the millennial class, is a communist or a Nazi. I don't believe that. Maybe there's 10%. Maybe 10% on each side. But that leaves 80% of us who say, no, I don't want either one of those. Things are being exposed. People and movements are being exposed, and they are being recreated. If you remember, I told you on Fox, and it's why they made fun of me about the Nazi movement, because I kept bringing up the Nazis, because I said, what is the point of never forget if you can't remember what the seeds are that are being planted? And the seeds have been planted. And I want you to hear me, please. Please, I beg of you, hear me on this. The seeds are being planted in Europe, and they are being planted here at the same time. But we are looking at people like Jones and saying, well, he's just one guy. What's the big deal? No, he's not. No, he is not. 2 days ago, I told you about this 120 decibel movement that is happening. And it sure makes a lot of sense. If you look it up and you see the videos, you're seeing these people who have been victimized by the refugees from the Middle East that are all pouring in, over a million pouring into to Europe and flooding the cities. And you don't know who's who. Many of them are Islamic extremists. It's why violence has gone through the roof. It's why rape has gone through the roof in places like Sweden, Austria, Germany, France, England, and nobody's willing to say anything. And because no one is willing to say the truth, well, when you finally hear somebody say, you know what, this is a problem, and we have to stand up for our women because they're being raped. We have to stand up for our faith because there are churches being burned, people being killed, ritual killings. This has got to stop. And because nobody is willing to say that in power, when somebody finally does stand up, people listen. But what is it they're really saying? Well, I'm a liberal. No, you're not. Well, yes, I'm a progressive. No, that's not what you really are. Okay, well, I'm a socialist. Okay. You're getting warmer. Last night, I laid out on the chalkboard, and I want you to go with me for the next few minutes on something that directly affects you. And if conservatives are not the ones to know this, be the watchdog for it, blow the whistle the hardest, we are going to be in the dustbin of history. Because the media is incentivized to make sure that you look just like that guy in Illinois, and they will do it. And it is happening, and the more they do it, the more it will force people into the camps of, you know what, screw them. So I am counting on this audience to be the one that actually saves the Republic in the end. And we'll begin that journey in a second. Liberty Safe. I want to talk to you a little bit about Liberty Safe. They make great safes, but now they're making it really easy to own one. Now at LibertySafe.com, you can buy a Liberty Safe with a great price and receive 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month. $20 a month. Now, I've been working with Liberty Safe for over 8 years now, and there is nothing like owning a Liberty. It's peace of mind, lifetime warranty, in-home delivery. It's unmatched in the industry. It's the best built safe in America, bar none. So have one installed in your home right now. You can get 12 months interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit. Every home has valuables. You'll be surprised on what you have to put in your Liberty Safe once you have it there. The biggest complaint is, I should have bought a bigger one. And I know that for firsthand because I bought a small one first, and I was like, it was full on the first day. And I'm like, crap, I didn't realize we had this many important things that I would rather have in a safe. Liberty Safe, for your guns, for your papers, for your photos, for the things that you have that have real value in your life. LibertySafe.com. Go there now. The home of the best-built safes on the planet. LibertySafe.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
The white majority are fed up with all of these lying, cheating, thieving, warmongering, child molesting, political pimps and whores of this corrupt and decadent two-party, Jew-party, queer-party system.
That is the guy who's about to win the Republican nomination for a congressional seat in Illinois. And the press is having a field day beginning today on CNN. It was 3 years ago this month that I did an expose on Russia and what Russia was planning on doing. I laid out the case that they are supporting far right and far left groups in Europe and would be doing it soon in America. Does anybody remember the tweets that were for Black Lives Matter and the tweets that were against Black Lives Matter here in America that were funded by Russia? This movement in Russia is not just advice or guidance, but it is cold, hard cash. France, their National Front, received 9 million euros from the Kremlin. The leader of Greece's Golden Dawn, which is the Nazi party in Greece, received handwritten notes from Kremlin advisors while he was in jail. Every influential extreme party in Europe is connected now to Russia in one way or another. A few months right after we aired the Russian support episodes of these groups on television, a gathering took place in St. Petersburg, Russia. It was called, and I need you to hear this carefully, the International Russian Conservative Forum. Conservative. Not American conservatives. Most people didn't pay any attention to it, but we have kept our eye on it. Fringe political activists from all over the world were in attendance. And from that meeting was the world. Now, this doesn't even make sense. The World National Conservative Movement. The World National? What? The World Nationalist National Conservative Not Movement. Its specific goal is to support radical activists and politicians all over the world, both financially and through, see if this sounds familiar, an aggressive social media and internet troll campaign. Ever since then, the World National Conservative Movement has acted like an international tides foundation for the far right. Their membership now boasts over 58 organizations. And if you look at the web of influence, they are literally everywhere around the world. And we've been seeing them on our televisions here in America, and we didn't understand it. I will explain it to you and show you what to look for in a minute.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
I've been studying revolution and the roots of extremism now for probably 15 years. And I am telling you, please, I'm begging you, please pay attention to the next few minutes and join me on this search and exposing of what is called the World National Conservative Movement, because it is not conservative. It is National Socialism. It is the Nazi Party. The World National Conservative Movement got together 3 years ago to unite and fund radical nationalist race-centered extremist groups. Their goal was to, with Russian money, launch social media campaigns designed to tear apart the Western alliance country by country by turning its citizens against each other. The nationalist movement has gathered up now these 58 to 60 plus groups, and they're growing quickly. Last night on TV, and we're going to post all of this on YouTube later today, so you can share it and watch those two segments from the television show and share it with your friends. Go to the Blaze YouTube channel later today. I showed last night invitations, and one of them was to Jim Dowson. Now, he's the founder of the UK's Britain First Party. Britain First. I think he was a member of the Nazi Party, but now it's Britain First. Kind of like Arthur Jones, who was on CNN today saying, I'm not a Nazi. I used to be, but I'm now a member of America First. Gee, all these groups seem to change their names right around the same time. I wonder why. The invitation that I showed you to Jim Dowson last night, similar invitations went out to several Americans. Jared Taylor of American Renaissance, not the Nazi Party, the American Renaissance Party. He was one of the founding party partners who attended the conference. Taylor has been a vocal American white supremacist for decades. He also shares a connection with Richard Spencer, who both tried to organize a conference in Hungary that was banned at the last minute. But also Spencer, the de facto leader of the alt-right, was arrested in Budapest and kicked out of the country. Another ally of Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor is Preston Wigginton. He's the guy who invited Spencer to speak at Texas A&M University and is one of the up-and-coming rising stars in the alt-right movement. All three men were present and in leadership roles at Charlottesville. Spencer was leading the torchlit marches. Wigginton was donning a military-style helmet and marching, and Taylor was in disguise, dressed as a curly-headed Frenchman at a meeting with other prominent white supremacists. All three of these men have one thing in common, and that is the connection, direct connection, to the World National Conservative Movement and their main ideologue, Alexander Dugin of Russia. Richard Spencer's alt-right blog is littered with Dugin's sermons and his theories. His wife is Alexander Dugin's English translator. She has devoted her life to translating his works. The conference that Jared Taylor and Spencer were organizing in Hungary was supposed to be keynoted by Alexander Dugin. Preston Wigginton, the young rising star, had Dugin host a lecture via Skype at Texas A&M. Dugin also recorded a speech titled To My American Friends in Our Common Struggle for a nationalist conference organized by Heimbach recently in California, of all places. As I said earlier, Jared Taylor was also at the initial WNCM conference back in 2015. Richard Spencer, in a recent blog post on altright.com, interviewed the leader of Austria's Generation Identity Groups, another one of these Russian-controlled and Russian-fueled groups. Remember, Generation Identity is one of the founding, you know, world national conservative movement groups. And in that interview, the Austrian said that there are two men who were the brainchild of this movement. A guy from France, Benoist, he was mentioned. He's a Frenchman that has been talking about national identity and opposition to global globalization ever since 1970. He actually started and coined the term European New Right. But Dugin too? The Austrian activist goes as far as saying that Dugin's book, The Fourth Political Theory, is a very important book for the movement. It is their Mein Kampf. Now, Dugin not only wants only Russians, but all of Europe to become aware of their race and identity struggle. He believes that it will bring forth a racial struggle, and this will fracture the Western society and the Western alliance. This is what the Russians ultimately want. Dugin's first book, Foundations of Geopolitics, laid out a Russian plan to reclaim the influence they lost after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Remember, Vladimir Putin said that was the biggest tragedy of the 20th century, was the dissolution of the Soviet Union. There were two main pillars. One, an alliance with Germany, Japan, and Iran, and encouraging racial and ethnic tensions within all of the Western alliance countries to break them apart. In Dugin's next book, The Mein Kampf of this movement, The Fourth Political Theory, he provided a manifesto for people like Richard Spencer and the rest of the American alt-right and the radical groups springing up all over Europe. If you think that Dugin and the World National Conservative Movement are entirely separate from the Russian government, consider that Dugin's books are now required reading at the Russian General Staff Academy. Both the book on geopolitics and the Mein Kampf. This Russia project is the largest intelligence active measure in history. They are organized. They are dedicated. And no one in the world is even focusing on them. I don't know anyone that is exposing this. There is no source to go to. And if you look for Dugin, you will find him in places like Alex Jones, in friendly situations. If you look at these sources of the world conservative movement, the world nationalist conservative movement, they all seem to really love one news source, and that is Breitbart. It has infiltrated, in Breitbart's case, because of Steve Bannon, intentionally. But I'm warning you, just as Hitler did, they will use every trap and every trick, and they will be your voice. Someone will stand up for you. You must do your research. We have to expose this group because they are not conservatives. You can say all you want, well, somebody's doing something. That's what the German people said. These are not conservatives. These are national socialists. They will use the flag and all of its trappings to sing right to your heart. They will use nationalism, and they will use your frustration of not having a job, somebody else coming in and taking your job. They will use the idea of there are terrorists all around. Those things may be true to some degree or another, but they're only using those things. They're only using those things to stir up the hatred. As I said 10 years ago on Fox, you will see in the coming days the rise of the exact same hatreds that we haven't seen since the 1930s. Please, please, don't be like the press was 10 years ago, because it is beginning. And it is, everybody dismissed the Nazi Party in 1923. Nobody was dismissing it in 1933. Please do not dismiss this warning. please, because it's not 1923. It is probably, I'm hoping, it's 1928. I mean, so many people that say, oh, come on. How many people would have said 4 years ago, I can't imagine a Nazi party in America? How many people would have said 2 years ago, the GOP would never have a Nazi run? Well, he's running. And the GOP is not endorsing him, but they're not standing against him either. Let me rephrase that. No one has stepped to the plate to make sure that that doesn't happen. He has no chance of winning. And so everybody's like, forget it. He's not going to win anyway. Please don't do that. Please don't do that. Stand. Somebody in Illinois, stand up. Look, here's the great thing. You can run. You will win. But you will never have to serve because you won't win in the general. You know, drop out as soon as this guy loses, if you want. Just don't let this man win the GOP nomination. All right, let me tell you about 1-800-Flowers.com. I have a group of beautiful roses. How many roses are in there, Stu? Is that 18? Right now, if you go to 1-800-Flowers.com, if you order early, can you count while I'm... Is that 18 or is that 24? You can get 18 pink and red roses for only $29.99. Not much more to get them all in red. There's all kinds of specials that are going on right now and all kinds of gifts beyond flowers that you can find now at 1-800-Flowers.com. And the roses are picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight to ensure their freshness. They are beautiful flowers. 18 red and pink roses for only $29.99. All you have to do is think ahead. All you have to do is make the call right now. To order them, go to 1-800-Flowers.com, 1-800-Flowers.com. You click on the radio icon and enter the promo code back. That way you'll get all the specials and the discounts. Order today, save right now, 1-800-Flowers.com. Did I tell you that Valentine's Day is next week? 1-800-Flowers.com, promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
All right, a couple things that we have to address today. I really want to address the other Russia story, and that is what the FBI undercover operative, all of the evidence that he gathered on the money laundering and the money that was going to the Clinton Foundation and others on Capitol Hill for Uranium One. Now, the media is trying to make this look like a conspiracy theorist, this guy. He was an agent for the government that the government was paying. In 2016, they paid him $16,000. It's just what he said about what he was doing and who he was briefing on that has a lot of people in trouble. And I think this is there's going to be a lot of the predictions that I made at Fox coming true this year. I said while I was there, if this president lasts 8 years, meaning Obama, that if he lasts 8 years, you will find shortly thereafter that what he was engaged in will far surpass Watergate. If what this FBI informant and if what this FBI, he wasn't an agent, but he was kind of trapped. He was involved in that. They turned him and they made him a spy for them. If all of the evidence that he collected is true, which we don't really have any reason to believe it's not, other than political reasons, the Obama administration is in real trouble and people will go to jail or should. And it implicates Hillary Clinton, and it is very bad. But again, this isn't a story just about Obama or Hillary or Donald Trump. This is a story about Russia. And that's the thing that I think everybody is missing. And it's driving me out of my mind because it's like, Stu, can you think of a bigger threat to our country in your lifetime than what is happening now in Russia, what we believe is happening now with Russia, their influencing of the elections, the influencing of these radical groups around the world, and the infiltration of our government?
Well, I mean, in reality, it's been the same threat for how many, you know, decades, and it's just changing forms. It's the same source.
Yeah.
We act as if the Cold War ended. I mean, it did in one sense. And we had a shot there. I think we had a real shot for a while, and it did not. Happen.
We believed, all of us. We believed, and we didn't question. Wait, what happened to those really bad KGB guys? What happened to the really bad?
They all became bakers. They just went into normal life and forgot all of their deeply held communist beliefs.
I think they're the oligarchs now. I think they're the ones running the place. I mean, it's really incredible how we just accepted people like Vladimir Putin, a KGB. He was a colonel in the KGB, a really bad guy. Watch him sometime. This is my favorite fact about Putin. Watch him walk. Only one arm swings. He is so used to having that one arm at his sidearm that arm doesn't swing when he's walking. He's used to that. That's the way the KGB used to walk. Their arms wouldn't swing. One would, because one had to stay close to the sidearm. You watch him walk sometime.
Really? I don't think I've ever noticed that.
Yeah. This was maybe like 10 years ago. We looked at that and I'm watching it going, oh my gosh, maybe it's different now, but I don't think so.
I'm too mesmerized by him being shirtless to even see his arms.
Yeah.
When he gets on that horse, I think we all understand what's going on.
Right.
Those good things.
Yes.
Good things.
Yes.
Shirtless on a horse.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to talk about the budget deal coming up in just a second, and how wonderful that is. And what was revealed in testimony yesterday on Capitol Hill about the FBI and Russia and Hillary Clinton.
Next. Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Let me see if I can help you understand the budget deal that the Senate just made using Oprah Winfrey and Star Wars. The national debt is now over $20 trillion. I believe it's $22 trillion, but I haven't checked my watch today. The annual GDP of the United States of America is $19 trillion, and our budget is $4 trillion. Now, let's just think about this one for a second. Everybody who makes any money, any business, from GE to the kid that's mowing lawns to the Girl Scout cookies with the Girl Scouts selling them door to door, that's all part of the $19 trillion in our GDP. How much money are we making as a country? And the government is spending $4 trillion of that. Now, I'm not a mathematician, but I play one on TV. I believe that that's about 20% of all of the cash. This government is spending 20% of every single penny that anyone in this country has earned. That's not going to last. That's why we're borrowing. So now let's look at this. Apparently, Mitch McConnell and Chuck Schumer, who learned their math from Common Core, apparently agreed not to cut the out-of-control spending, but to increase it by $300 billion. And if this is approved by the House, the budget will be locked in till 2020. They're not going to pass another budget, guys, until 2020. They'll say that, that they will, but they're not going to pass a budget. We haven't passed one in, what, 10 years? Is there not even the appearance anymore of anyone in the Senate that is trying to, again, appear to be fiscally conservative? I'm just curious. Did the Senate Republican leadership all eat Tide Pods yesterday? What the hell happened? Is there some new virus that induces high fever, diarrhea, and turns conservatives into liberals? I'm not sure, because this is money that we do not have and we have to borrow. Has anybody noticed that this year alone, by September, we have to borrow an additional $1 trillion? $1,085% increase from last year? And we have no plan to pay any of this back. But that didn't stop Mitch McConnell. Nope. He's in there for the people. He's the one handling the Democratic concession after concession after concession. And here's how he handled it. You get $1 billion, and you get $1 billion, and you get $1 billion. Check under your seats. The last time I checked, the Republicans controlled every branch of the government. So why are we acting like we're playing this game with less players on the field? I'm just wondering. Because if this is the new norm, how bad is it going to be when the Democrats take both houses and the presidency eventually? How bad is it going to be when they just have the House and the Senate? Now the deal goes back to the House. And if something doesn't happen to stop this, we're in for a dangerous downward spiral of spending that doesn't ever stop. All eyes are on you, Freedom Caucus. Hurry, Freedom Caucus. You're our only hope. You might be the only remaining conservatives left on Capitol Hill. Congratulations to the United States of America. Last year, we historically voted for Republicans in the House, the Senate, and the executive branch. And now, with the inclusion of amnesty and the dumpster fire of a budget, what we're getting in return is a Republican majority with Democratic policies.
It's Thursday, February 8th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, it's really strange, Stu. You see this as a huge loss. You see any upside on this?
I mean, I guess that we won't be dealing with, we need to pass a new continuing resolution or a government shutdown every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to not have to deal with that. Other than that, though, I mean, it's a gigantic increase in spending. You know, people keep saying, oh, it's a $300 billion deal. It's not a $300 billion deal. It, basically, the way this works is there's a $150 billion per year increase in spending as part of this deal. But that just becomes the new baseline of the budget. So every budget negotiation.
Draconian cuts.
Right.
Stu, draconian cuts.
They're not going to come in and say, okay, hey, by the way, we're going to cut back to what we had 2 years ago at $150 billion. Right.
The cupboards are bare.
Exactly. So every negotiation will now start from this $150 billion per year increase. And so really what this is a $1.5 trillion bill, which would increase spending that much over 10 years. Now, $1.5 trillion is also what they say the quote-unquote cost of the tax plan was. So now you've cut the revenues by $1.5 trillion and increased spending by $1.5 trillion over the same decade. And that's within the last 3 months. That doesn't include what's supposed to come next with infrastructure and family leave. And
yeah, we're at $3 trillion of cutting taxes, $1.5, and then increasing spending, $1.5. You're at $3 trillion. He wants to now have a 1.7 or 5 or 3, whatever it is, $1 trillion stimulus package on top of that. Mm-hmm. So we're now at 4.3 to 4.7 in 1 year.
Yeah.
In 1 year.
And this is, I mean, so far we haven't heard from the White House whether they agree with this deal. I mean, they said they were happy that a deal was done, but they haven't talked about specifics. We don't know if it's going to pass the House. But so step one is this $1.5 trillion. It's not $300 billion, despite what everybody's saying. And it's going to be more than that because, of course, every negotiation is going to increase the budget after this. Mm-hmm. The other part is, and this is a really scary one if you're a conservative, it apparently, because it's going to be a two-year budget deal, they likely will not go on and do another budget in 2019.
Guaranteed.
This is Nerdsville, but the bottom line is they can't get another reconciliation bill through without the budget. So that would mean that they have no opportunity to pass something like, let's say, Obamacare repeal with 50 to 51 votes, depending on, obviously, Pence is there, so 50. But so they would have to get to 60 votes for everything, which means they're not going to get anything passed. You don't want that to happen, obviously. I don't think it necessarily means it's impossible, but it makes it a lot less likely
right.
that they would do something like
well,
that.
Well, and here's the good thing. DACA is going to go up for a vote, too. So,
yeah, you're going to get, well, DACA times 2.5.
Yeah, but that's, I think, what all the conservatives wanted was DACA times 2.5 with the passage also of comprehensive immigration reform and a path to citizenship.
Plus the trillions of dollars in spending. Win, win, win. I mean, I think there's an argument to be made here that, you know, look, Democrats went into this, they tried to shut the government down, didn't work out well for them. Now they're coming back to the table this was a big surprise yesterday. And, you know, it was a deal between McConnell and Schumer. Basically, what Republicans
the two
got,
guys that I think mm-hmm. America says we're in safe hands with those two clowns.
Yeah. What Republicans got was increased military spending, which is, you know, that's an important priority. However, on the other side of that, you got almost as much spending on programs for Democrats. And Chuck Schumer went through a big list of them in his sort of his.
Here, you got to listen to it. I can't take all of it, but here's a little bit of Chuck Schumer yesterday.
Alongside the increase in defense spending, the budget deal will lift funding for domestic programs by $131 billion. Mm-hmm. It will fully repeal the domestic sequester caps while securing $57 billion in additional funding, including $6 billion to fight against the opioid and mental health crises, $5.8 billion for the bipartisan Child Care Development Block Grant.
Oh, dear God.
$4 billion.
What's that mean?
To rebuild and improve veterans' hospitals and clinics. $2 billion for critical research at the National Institutes in Health.
On what?
And $20 billion to augment our existing infrastructure programs.
What?
Including surface transportation, rural water and wastewater, clean and safe drinking water.
What does that mean?
Broadband, so desperately needed
broadband.
In large parts of rural America.
We got broadband.
And energy infrastructure.
Holy cow.
And $4 billion.
Okay, stop. I can't take it anymore.
This went on and on.
Declaring victory. Now, may I give you an opposing view of what I've just said, that what I've just said is, old-time thinking. What we've just been talking about is old-timey thinking. When you expected a conservative and a constitutionalist to actually be a conservative and a constitutionalist. Now, I believe on both sides, it's all about winning. I just want to shut the other side up. And so you could look at this, and I think many Americans are looking at it this way, even though the amnesty thing, we asked you, what is the one thing that would be a tripwire that would turn you against Donald Trump? What is there anything that this guy could do? The calls were unanimous. Yes, the border, amnesty. Well, he's just given it, and nobody cares. So old-timey thinking is somebody cares. Today's thinking is nobody cares. It's just about winning. So let me look at it. Let me do the analysis from just the point of we won. The Democrats have lost an incredible defeat of shutting down the government, and they looked horrible. Then they went into the State of the Union, where they sat on their hands and they didn't applaud for anything that was mainstream America. Then they sat on their hands when the president did the thing that anybody who voted for Trump said they would abandon him if he ever did it. He offered them DACA times 2.5 plus a path to citizenship. And they looked horrible. They didn't cheer. They didn't embrace it at all. In fact, they said he was taking people hostage. Then Nancy Pelosi did a filibuster that was a buster. Right. It was.
It wasn't a filibuster because there's no filibuster in the House.
No.
But that's a whole other situation.
It was horrible.
Right.
And the Democrats all know that. And the Democrats are all the ones who are running for midterm said, thank you, Nancy. You just lost the election for me. That's what Democrat. That's what's happening in the Democratic circles. Another win for the Republicans. They also now have a president who has a chief of staff who declared 2 days ago that he is the champion of those who were here illegally. He's their champion. The Democrats have lost that as well. Hmm. So if you don't care about, you know, what we always said we cared. I'm sorry, I'm just too old, I guess. If you cared about the things that we said we cared about, this was a bad day yesterday. If you don't, and you're just wanting to win, yesterday was a good day.
It's interesting. I think your perspective is right, but I guess my point would be, you know, what is the definition of win? You know, like, for example,
beating the Democrats.
Let's say this. I come to you.
For most people,
beating the Democrats. I, Stu, come to Glenn Beck and I say, I want 10 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. And you say, no, I'm giving you 0 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. Okay. So then I go to the rest of the company and I say, this guy's a jerk. He's saying 0 weeks of vacation. Do you believe this guy? And I make a big deal about it. Mm-hmm. And I filibuster and I do all those things. And then you come out and you make a big speech in front of the company and you say, I am a champion for Stu getting 10 weeks of vacation. And I get my 10 weeks of vacation. And I look like a weirdo because I've been out here fighting and screaming and yelling about it. But you are now the champion of the 10 weeks of vacation. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is I got my 10 weeks of vacation, whether you get credit for it or I get credit for it. And this idea that winning is just the credit is a real problem.
Yes, it is. But
it is realistic.
Let me show you, yes, how realistic it was. Who were the champions of equal rights? Who were the the real champions of civil rights? They were the Republicans.
Right.
The Democrats thwarted it every time it came to the House. Every single time. But in the last hour, it was LBJ, the guy who stood against the same bill when the Republicans introduced it in the 50s mm-hmm. and fought against it the whole time. It was him at the last moment saying, we're presenting a civil rights bill. Look who won. Look who won eventually.
Won what? Right?
I mean, again, I'm only talking about the new reality mm-hmm. where principles don't matter. Winning is the only thing that matters. Let me talk to you about emergency preparedness. The FEMA. In an amazing statement, FEMA came out in December and said, we can't afford anything anymore. We're out. And Americans have to prepare so they can last the first at least couple of weeks. Well, why wasn't that everywhere? Why wasn't that everywhere? When FEMA is, when the government, this government is saying, hey, you really need to prepare because we ain't coming. We ain't coming. We can't afford it, and it's a different world. Well, that's a problem. Unless you're prepared, and it's so easy. You just have to take, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Is emergency food preparedness seems really, really tough and complex, but it's not anymore. And thanks to the people at My Patriot Supply, right now you can get 70 servings of survival food, 70, for less than a dollar per serving. This is made specifically for everybody in your household, so you can buy one for you and one for, you know, your wife or husband and one for each of the kids at $67. That's 2 weeks of food for each person at $67 per person. You're not going to be able to find that anyplace else, and it only lasts this week. Go to preparewithglenn.com. Preparewithglenn.com, 800-977-0542. 800-977-0542 or preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
The story of the FBI informant, the testimony that came out yesterday, is not shocking if you watched our special on Uranium One. I think it was Uranium One. Was that in January or was that last December? We did a 3 or 4 day special on what is happening with Russia, Uranium One, and Hillary Clinton, and it's pretty shocking. We'll post that today up on our YouTube channel at The Blaze, and I urge you to share it with friends. We told you about a guy who was giving testimony and had delivered evidence, quote, mountains of evidence to the FBI and to the government on what was going on, deep corruption throughout our system of government. And it was held secret by Barack Obama. Well, yesterday, while some in the media tried to dismiss this, I don't know what you would call it, government informant, he was valuable enough to have the FBI pay him $50,000 in a check in 2016. He said he was, all of his work was briefed to the president as part of his daily presidential briefings. The FBI forced him to pay $500,000 of his own money to Russian officials as bribes to facilitate his cover. The Bureau never reimbursed him, for that, despite the praise for his work. That's why he turned on them. And I have an interesting perspective on that if we can get to it a little later. But he said Russian and American executives are implicated in the bribery scheme, and they asked him to try to get the Uranium One deal approved by the Obama administration. He provided documentation of the corruption and crimes taking place to help Russia and the Obama administration months before they made a series of decisions that directly benefited Vladimir Putin. There's a long string of things, including the what he describes as money laundering with the Clinton Foundation and the millions of dollars the Clinton Foundation received at the same time, and he was part of it. More coming up.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Something I haven't mentioned this week, and I'm going to address tomorrow. Over the weekend, the world got a little bit dimmer because we lost truly, truly a great man. His name is John Huntsman Sr. If you are a longtime listener of this program, he has appeared on my program several times, and the reason why I haven't talked about it is I tend to get a little emotional. He, in many ways, was a father figure in my life at exactly the time I needed a father figure. And it's just a complex thing. I'm going to his funeral on Saturday, and we never had a funeral for my father. We weren't allowed to because of a family squabble, so I never attended, and neither did my sisters, anything to memorialize my father's passing. So I'm a little nervous about Saturday, because I've never met a greater man.
I've never met a more giving man and a more forgiving man. Now, that's one thing that we really have a hard time with is forgiveness. I talked about it on Monday. Forgiveness is hard because we want other people to pay. You know, I'm having a hard time right now with the press because, you know, they're questioning the president. Is he a racist? They're questioning the president, saying, you know, is he a totalitarian dictator? All the things that we were afraid of under Obama. And we weren't allowed to say it. And now that they're saying it, I am so angry. I can't even get past it. And I have to. I can't get past the fact. Are you kidding me? And if I can't get past that, but I want them to say it, and they're not going to. And that's the thinking of a madman trying to, I got to let go of the things that I can't control. But forgiving each other and forgiving yourself is really hard. Really hard. Because, as I pointed out earlier this week, forgiveness requires two things: self-worth and humility. Being humble enough to say, hey, I understand. And having enough self-worth when it comes to you that you deserve forgiveness. They never go hand in hand, and they have to. I talked about this, and then I got a phone call at the end of the show, 2 hours later, from a former vet who was distraught and said, you know, I only listened to you from time to time, and I never expected to get anything from you. And thank you. He said, I realized, and he had pulled his truck over, and he had sat there for about an hour and a half crying. And he said, I realized how much I hate myself. And I hate myself because I don't feel useful. I feel worthless. I served. I was in the military and I served. And now I come back and I'm not. And I hate myself. I have gone through that. I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I hated myself so much because of the lies I told myself. You're weak, you're pathetic, you can't even make it a day without a drink. You promised yourself last night or yesterday morning when you got up that you weren't going to drink yesterday. And then you did. You made some excuse. I know. Well, I'm not going to drink today. And then I would drink, and I hated myself. I had to, actually, every time I walked into the bathroom, I had to open up my mirror so I didn't look myself in the eye anymore. I could not look myself in the eye. That was the end. That was the end. And I didn't know how to get out of it. And I had no self-worth, and there was no forgiveness for me. I wasn't worthy. And I hated people. No, I didn't. I hated myself. It's kind of what this veteran said when he called this week, and I understood. And we've gotten an awful lot of email on it. One stuck out to me, and I want to read it to you. Dear Mr. Beck, my name is Hannah Hastings. I'm engaged to an amazing man. Kyle listens to your podcast faithfully every single morning to the point of sometimes I just can't shut him up about his heroes, Pat and Stu, and you. He's a huge fan of all of you, and in most days, your podcast moves him. On most days, your podcast moves him to tears. Kyle is a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. He served 4 years and went on two deployments overseas, one of the two times to Iraq. Today, he listened in, and he was moved. He was moved at hearing that veteran speak because that's exactly the way he feels. I think whether he'll address it or not, his wounds go a lot deeper than his pride will let him show. Kyle is an amazing, wonderful man. However, like the fellow veteran said on your show this morning, he feels useless now. He's served, and now he feels that he has nothing to show for it other than a couple of ribbons and a certificate of completion. This veteran of mine is worth so much more than he knows. I'm writing to you hoping that maybe you'll give him a shout out on the show one morning, just to let him know that you, his hero, knows that he exists and he is not alone. As I'm typing this in the other room, I'm listening to the strongest man I know sniffle and break down over somebody finally understanding exactly how he feels. Thank you for your time. I want to acknowledge that you've made an impact on someone else's life just by being you. But would you please keep him in your prayers? I hope God can touch you and others in the way he's touched me by gracing me with Kyle now in my life. Thanks. Hannah Hastings, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Kyle, I got this letter 3 days ago, and I've been writing back and forth with your fiance. The first thing you need to do is marry that woman. She loves you. I want you to know that while I can't relate to your military experience, and honestly, I praise God for that, I do understand your feelings. I want you to know in the early 90s, I had a moment where I had to choose life or death. And my mom committed suicide. And I was at about her same age that when she committed suicide, and I had to choose. And I had no idea how to live. I had no idea how to be happy. I had no idea how to be a good man, a good father. None of it. I was completely lost. And I knew that night, it was a Christmas Eve, I knew that night that I would either live or die. That I either had to pick myself up and figure out how to live, or just lay down and die. Because of my childhood, some would say it made it easier for me to lay down and die, but because of my childhood, I knew that suicide was not an answer. It was the most selfish thing that could happen. And I was a coward. I couldn't do it. So I decided to stand. And I wish I could tell you that the next day, everything was great, but it wasn't. It was kind of the same. Except for one thing. I had made a choice. And I was determined to find a way. Question with boldness even the very existence of God, for if there be a God, he must surely rather honest questions over blindfolded fear. Dedicate yourself to asking the hardest, most honest questions that you can. Ask them of yourself, ask them of others. Be the opposite of what the world is. Don't try to win, just try to find out the truth. Try to reconcile that truth with your life. I will make you this promise, Kyle, that if you dedicate yourself to finding the truth with humility by asking honest questions, a year from now, your life is going to start blossoming. You will see Hannah in an entirely new light. You'll see the world as it really is. You have tremendous, tremendous value. I am a firm believer that we were all born at this time for a reason. And no matter who you are, your reason has not yet happened. Spend every second of this short life trying to make the best of it and the most of it. Because when you get to the other side, I think you'll be surprised. Holy crap. It was that? That was my reason? Wow. But look at all the other things that I got to do and I experienced because I was honestly searching for a better way to live. I want to thank you so much for listening. Sometimes it's, it's weird. It's sometimes we forget. In our worst days, we forget. We get wrapped up in ourselves and the things we're mad about, things we want to talk about, and we forget that you're taking the journey with us, and I sincerely appreciate it. Thank you. All right, let me tell you about Valentine's Day. What are you doing for Valentine's Day, Stu? I'm going to Jim Gaffigan on Friday. It's a laugh and cry weekend. It's my birthday. Saturday is my birthday. I'm going to one of my dear friend's funeral on my birthday.
Jeez.
The night before, Tanya was going to make it a really special weekend for my birthday. And so it's starting with Jim Gaffigan. We're taking the whole family to go see Jim Gaffigan.
He's great.
He's fantastic. But what are you doing for Valentine's Day? I'm hoping that this kind of covers it. I'm hoping that I can just, there's some flowers and I hate Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it's tough. And surely I've got a plan that I can't reveal to you because she might be listening.
Okay. All right.
Right?
Okay. Yes. I'm sure that's the reason why you're not revealing that grand plan. Do you remember when we first met and we were like, we were both really good at things like this? Mm-hmm. We would talk to each other. Okay. I got an idea. Here's an idea for Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. Here's an idea for a birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, it's our 3.5 month anniversary of meeting.
Right.
We were so clever. Now it's like, yeah. Do you have that phone number or that flower place? Do you have that?
I will say we used to be good at life at one point.
At one point. And then the reality set in.
That's why you have to make all these things easy.
Yeah. Easy.
Knock them out.
And here it is. If flowers don't work for you, they have all kinds of sweets and treats and everything else at 1-800-flowers.com. And this is something that you can go on the website and you can spend a lot of time and you can just look and find something, or you can spend no time at all. Just go to 1-800-flowers.com and they make it so easy for you to find exactly what you're looking for. 1-800-flowers.com. No matter what you're looking for, including the 18 pink and red roses now for $29.99. That's $29.99 for 18 pink and red roses. Do it now at 1-800-flowers.com. That's 1-800-flowers.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So 140,000 photos of smiling babies, all of them beautiful, all of them full of wonder, all of them unknowingly competing, you know, in that cutthroat contest to be the cutest for Gerber. Courtney didn't think her son Lucas had a chance, but she submitted the picture anyway. It took her 5 seconds to post the photo along with the contest hashtag, and then she forgot about it. 2 weeks later, something arrived in the mail. Courtney and her husband Jason were informed that Lucas had been chosen as Gerber's spokesbaby for 2018. Not only had he won the coveted position of and $50,000, he also made history because Lucas is the first Down syndrome baby to become a Gerber baby. Gerber, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, you give me hope in humanity that compassion is still alive. The fact that you have recognized that this baby born with Down syndrome is deserving of love, care, and a future flies in the face of everything that the world is battling with right now. Today, 100% of babies diagnosed with Down syndrome are aborted in Iceland. Reykjavik is the first city to have now a zero population growth of Down syndrome children. The Dutch National Institute of Public Health calculated the cost of caring what they called callously a downer and publicly shamed a man with Down syndrome on video because his life cost them 10 times the amount of someone without Down syndrome. Iceland and the Netherlands, shame on you. You're on the wrong side of history. But I choose to let my heart be full of joy for Lucas and his parents. Thank you. Thank you, Gerber, for recognizing the right to life of children with Down syndrome.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
So much to the, I would think, chagrin of my friends and chagrin of his friends, we are friends. Eric Liu, he is the founder and CEO of Citizen University, also the executive director of the Aspen Institute Citizenship and American Identity Program. He's from Seattle. I don't think I need to say anything else. He's from Seattle. So we don't necessarily agree on everything. But we have become friends because we both are trying to find sane ways to have conversations with each other and other people, or we're doomed. We're doomed. Welcome. How are you?
Glenn, it's great to be back. It's great to see
you. How's Seattle?
Seattle is, it's beautiful. It's it's thriving. It's booming. It's and you know, you grew up in the area.
I know. I love it. I love it. I love it. I don't think I'd be welcome there anymore. I don't think I was welcome there 10 years ago, let alone today.
Well, we'll follow up and bring you back together, and we'll do something in Seattle.
Yeah, good. I'd love to. So, would you agree with me that both sides, to one degree or another, have become unhinged on the extreme edges?
Yeah, I think our politics today, and especially if you spend more than 10 minutes on social media, is about voices on the unhinged extremes.
Yeah.
And it's about this pattern that plays out over and over where each extreme has to gin it up in order to feed the rage and the anger about the other side's extreme.
Yeah.
You know, I think that is our politics as it's mediated, you know, especially
right.
through social media.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, we were talking about this before we went on air. There is a broad swath of, you know, sane people, call them, you know, interested bystanders, people who aren't super active in politics, super active in commenting on politics, who just want to understand each other and who just want to fix stuff.
Yeah.
And some of them are as progressive as I am, and some of them are as libertarian as you are, and many of them are in all points between, but they're not interested in the game playing and the posturing that so much of national politics is about today.
Yeah, I mean, we're making everything about politics now. Absolutely everything is about politics, and we're not going to survive that. That's nuts. The story today came out on Sports Illustrated. They just did a swimsuit issue that doesn't have any swimsuits. All of the women are completely naked, and they're beautiful women. One is lying down naked, face up, with the word "truth" painted on her rib cage. Another one is naked with "feminist" emblazoned on her arm. The other is the daughter of Christy Brinkley that is staring at the camera, laying on her side with the word "progress" written across her back. And they've put this. I don't understand this. This is Sports Illustrated, a magazine for men, trying to say, see, we shouldn't objectify women. I don't understand that.
Yeah, there's a lot that is great fundamentally about the Me Too movement and the fact that our society is waking up to shifting norms on what's okay when it comes to actually treating women with respect.
Yes.
Right? But I do not look to Sports Illustrated as my moral guide on the objectification of women.
Right? How do we find a way... And tell me what your feelings are on the people that you know, on the dangers. Even Margaret Atwood brought this up: the dangers of these kangaroo courts, or just not even a kangaroo court. Just you're guilty and you're done if anybody accuses you.
The danger is there, but I think actually as a society we're navigating it right now. I mean, this is somewhat uncharted, right? It's not like the society has tried before to have deep equity between men and women on who gets to harass whom. We've never done that before. We're having a society-wide reckoning. Are there going to be cases where people abuse that, the power that comes with that? Sure. But are our institutions and are the leaders in our institutions fundamentally trying to reckon with that in good faith? I actually think we are, right? And even this kind of absurd Sports Illustrated cover is a sign that, you know, one thing you can say about Sports Illustrated is they're trying to tune into the zeitgeist. They are aware of the marketplace, right? And they know the zeitgeist is,
yes,
you got to be on the right side of this,
yes,
issue, right?
Right.
And that's
right. But if I did photos of naked women and put, you know, hashtag me too, I don't think I'd get the either side, in my case, yeah, from either side.
The question is one of, you know, in the law, they talk about standing. Do you have standing to make a case, right? Yeah. During the Super Bowl, we all watched the ads and stuff. I didn't think Dodge Ram Trucks had the moral standing to use an MLK speech about the dangers of commercialism to sell trucks. To me, that was, and to lots of Americans, that was, you know what? message and messenger not aligned here. Right?
You mean the MLK message?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so the MLK message, may I present an opposite point of view? That's a sermon that most Americans have never heard, was really good. I agree with you that, you know, the images of the truck coming in halfway and you're like, okay, that's really, you don't need that. Just a simple Dodge,
yeah,
at the end,
yes,
would have been perfect.
Would have been great.
However, I have had more email on a monologue that I did on forgiveness, and I used that sermon the very next day. I've had more email on that from people who woke up. I mean, so you can't necessarily reject it as universally bad that they did it, because it did affect people.
Well, I mean, look, Sports Illustrated was trying to do something like the right thing, but the equivalent would have been, had they had a cover, they said, this year's swimsuit issue, here's what it looks like. And it was a black cover that just said, we're taking some responsibility for feeding this culture in which women are treated like objects, in which men feel they have permission to treat women like objects. We own a piece of that.
And it would be the lowest selling.
It would, but that would be a powerful statement. That would be,
right? Yes. And I don't know.
Writing it on naked women's bodies doesn't seem quite
as powerful. It'd be low selling as a swimsuit issue, but the whole country would be talking about it.
Yes, that's
talking
true.
About Sports,
yeah,
Illustrated.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. That's true. So who have you found, Eric? You know, I have been looking for a while, looking for people like you that we don't necessarily agree, but we can have really good conversations and we can move things forward together.
Mm-hmm.
Who have you found on the left or in the media that is really willing to do that?
You know, and I'm not sure if she's been a guest on your show, but my friend Neera Tanden, who runs the Center for American Progress, so
big
progressive think tank that,
yeah,
I know you cross swords with, right?
Yeah.
But Neera is both able and willing to have conversations with anybody, and to have them in ways that aren't just about the made-for-TV food fight,
mm-hmm,
that are really trying to say, what's your deal, right? What are you getting at here?
I really feel one of the biggest problems is nobody's listening at all.
Yeah.
Nobody feels heard right now. Somehow or another, the left, which still controls most of the media, doesn't feel heard. And the right, now that they control the House and the Senate, and that they don't feel heard. And it's because nobody is actually, I guess emoting what the average person is feeling right now. You know, we're all scared. It's amazing. I saw a YouTube video of a liberal talking about how afraid she was that Donald Trump was going to build concentration camps. And it was in a room, it probably had 1,000 people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they all were like, yeah, yeah. And I remember I debunked the lie about Obama making concentration camps, because that was a big deal.
Big conspiracy theory.
Big conspiracy. Yeah, yeah. I was called a conspiracy theorist for debunking that conspiracy theory. And now the other side is feeling the same kind of fear that so many Americans did when they didn't trust the president. And I think this is a moment where we can wake up and say, see, this is why the president should never have this much power. The president should not be able to affect our lives to the point to where we're afraid of him.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. I think there's one lesson that people on the left are learning today, and that is the dangers of this imperial presidency, right? Which is not a Trump phenomenon or even an Obama phenomenon.
No, it's been going
back
a long
half
time.
A century at least,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, yeah.
At least since World War II, right? The concentration of power in the executive, right?
Yeah.
But I think I want to go back to something you were saying about listening and being heard, right? We live in this time right now where there is, and we've talked about this, there's so much pain. There's so much pain. The segment you were doing right before the break, mm-hmm. In which you were just speaking to a human, an individual, about the pain they are feeling in their journey. And you were tying it to the pain that you have felt at various points on your journey, right? That kind of conversation, which is both about listening, but it's about, I'm not just listening to the words you're saying and to the points you're making. I'm trying to listen underneath to the emotional currents there. That's a set of habits that nobody's modeling for us in national politics, mm-hmm. and that we as citizens, frankly, it's gotten easier for us basically to shed those habits because nothing in our daily lives rewards that, right? Social media doesn't reward that.
The media doesn't reward that, right?
And so we've got to actually build experiences where we see each other face to face again. If we were having this conversation by phone, this would be different. But I'm looking you in the eye right now, Glenn, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at you as you have spoken about these questions. And there's a human connection here that I can't now just call you a nut job and call you a this and call you that. Like, we've connected on some level, right? Doesn't mean we're going to agree on the issues, but it means that I'm not going to demonize. And I think the deepest ill in our politics is how we've forgotten how to rehumanize each other.
It's so funny. I was just wrote a member of the press this morning, a private conversation that dealt with that. I said, we are calling each other subhumans exactly the way the early, 1920s Nazis were starting to train mm-hmm. people that you're subhuman. Mm-hmm. If you don't agree with me, you're subhuman. And we're training each other that way. But it doesn't. Social media is not the only one that doesn't reward it. Media doesn't reward it either. I mean, if you're not going to call somebody a nut job or a Nazi, you don't win, and they don't put you on. And you, Stu, was it you yesterday that said that you had seen somebody say, no, well, on the surface, this means X and X. And the guy was like, no, but that's... Tell the story.
It was an interview about some controversial comment that had gone on in the media. And they had brought someone on to kind of answer for it in the typical kind of cable news back and forth. And that was essentially the way they went when the person was pushing back against it. They said, yeah, but you got to admit on the surface, it's an insult. And it's like, well, isn't the point here as human beings that we go beyond the surface, that we think a little bit deeper about these things?
Yeah.
Because we can all get frustrated at the surface of it. We can all find the worst possible intent of a comment and turn it into something that's going to enrage our side. But that shouldn't be our goal.
So Eric, how do we do that?
Well, it starts with something that I actually want to give you guys credit for, which is you got to put something at risk, right? When you started a couple of years ago saying, I own my piece of how our politics and our political culture have gotten toxic. I've decided I want to be part of the solution. I want to start reaching out and having conversations across different divides, right? You put a bunch of stuff at risk. You feel it acutely, right? You feel it every day. You put, I don't have to name it, right? It's not just about the business side of things and the listeners and the sponsors or whatever. I'm talking about just reputational power and so forth, right? You put stuff at risk. And I often ask myself and I ask my friends who are left of center, what are we willing to put at risk in order to change this politics, in order to go a little deeper beyond the surface and beyond just this throwing of flames at each other, right? So number one, it's being willing. And I want to name the fact that you all have started something and set in motion a different cycle of responsibility taking rather than responsibility shirking, right?
Thank you.
There is only one way to break the cycle of dehumanization and responsibility shirking, and that is to break it.
Yeah.
That is to be, say, you know what? I didn't start it. I'm not the one to blame, but darn it, I'm actually just going to say, I'm stopping right now and I'm trying to change direction here, go a little deeper, rehumanize. And yeah, I may pay some price for that, but this is a question of purpose.
As one of the famous poets said, we didn't start the fire.
It was Billy Joel in Stop It.
It was always
a poet. Yes, indeed. Yeah,
so what do your friends say to you when you say, what are we willing to lose? What are we willing to, what chip are we willing to put up?
Let me tell you about something we've been doing at Citizen University. We, for the last year plus now, year and a quarter, We've been doing these regular gatherings that we call Civic Saturday. And these are basically a civic analog to church. It's not church, it's not synagogue or mosque, but it's about American civic religion, right? The stuff that you and I as civic nerds are steeped in, right? I mean, understanding the language and the texts and the what you might think of as civic scripture, whether that's from the Declaration or the Preamble or King's Speeches or Susan B. Anthony or whatever it might be, and understanding that we have all inherited this body of values and text and idea, and we do these gatherings with the arc of a faith gathering. We sing together, you turn to the stranger next to you, you talk about a common question, there are readings of these texts, there's a sermon that I've been giving, and then afterwards there's more song, and then there's an hour afterwards where people kind of form up in circles and talk about what are we going to do together, right? And I go at length to tell you about this because, number one, it's been amazing how people have responded to this. There is this need across the left and the right, whether you are traditionally religious or not, there is this need in our political life for a space where we can come together and rehumanize, right? Number one. But number two, when in that space, I've said to folks in these sermons what I said here, which was, we've got to be willing to take risks. We've got to be willing to ask ourselves, what are we willing to put on the line? And people sit there for a minute because they haven't been asked / challenged to do that in a long time, right? All of our political leadership is about, let me indulge you. Let me indulge your worst instincts. Yep. Let me indulge you. Not what can you do and maybe even give up a little bit in order to start solving the problem, right? And that leads to different kinds of conversations. And frankly, not all of them are about Trump or national politics. A lot of these conversations then come to life in our city, which is changing dramatically right now.
That's
right?
What it should come down to in the first place. Eric, we're going to continue our conversation at 5 o'clock tonight on the Glenn Beck program. He has written a book, You're More Powerful Than You Think. His name is Eric Liu, and we'll have more tonight at 5 o'clock. Make sure you join us on theblaze.com/TV. Stu saw a story yesterday about how millennials think that the stock market is too volatile.
Oh, yeah. Too risky, Glenn, I believe was the term.
So
they've made a choice.
Yeah.
Invest in Bitcoin.
Right. Because that's definitely
not
volatile.
Definitely not.
Okay. All right. I think you misunderstand how this works. I'm a big believer in Bitcoin, but it's a little volatile. Yeah. We're all screwed. All right. Here's the deal. With the Dow on a wild roller coaster in the last few trading days, may I note that gold is actually slightly up. Why gold is up is for several reasons. One, volatility, but more importantly, interest rates. And that is one of the reasons why the stock market is having a hard time. Interest rates are going up. Inflation is also going up. When those things happen, the safe haven is gold. I don't buy it as an investment. I buy it, again, as a kind of an insurance policy against insanity. And I think the world is a little insane right now. So I just want to make sure that there's something out there that actually exists that means something. This goes all the way back to the, you know, biblical days and beyond. Gold is the standard and always has been. So if gold or silver is right for you, and please read all of the information and find out all of the risks. But go to Goldline, 1-866-GOLDLINE. These are the people I've trusted for years. Goldline.com, 1-866-465-3546, Goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So last night on the television program, and we will have it, if you are a subscriber, please watch it. It's last night's TV show. If you if you're not a subscriber, please subscribe and support The Blaze. Otherwise, today I am releasing yesterday and the day before's TV section on this, and I'm going to put it up on our The Blaze YouTube channel so you can watch it, and please spread it to all of your friends. I was talking about how the Russians have put together this nice little Nazi group, and it is infecting all countries around the world in the Western Alliance. They have funded, brought these people together for a giant convention. They are they're not just advising them. For instance, stay away from National Socialist. Call yourself like Britain first. Call yourself America first. They are advising them and they are funding them. And last night I said, look, this is really important for you to understand because it shows, A, what the Russians are actually doing, and their stated goal is to fund these groups, pay for social media campaigns with the intent of dividing people racially. So it will collapse each nation and break apart the Western alliance. That's the stated goal. And I said last night, you have to know about it because of Russia, but more importantly, because it is here and the media will not, they will not care. A conservative is a conservative. And this is the world national conservative movement. It is not about the world and it is not about conservatives. It's about nationalism, national socialist. Listen to what happened today on CNN. Can we play the, what was the name of this guy, Stu? Arthur Jones.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, we've played some of the clips today. Maybe number three would be a good one.
Okay.
Because this is where he really kind of gets into his belief system here.
Mr. Jones,
the Democrats and Republicans know that the cursed two-party Jew party queer party system can't stand
your language and the fact that you deny the Holocaust. You are entitled.
Yes,
to
I deny
your,
the Holocaust.
Listen,
it's an extortion racket.
You
pure
are
and simple.
Entitled to
and
your
if you
own
did any investigation, if you did
theories.
Any honest, in, if you did any honest investigation of the Holocaust, you'd realize that it is nothing but an international extortion racket by the Jews to bleed, blackmail, extort, and terrorize their enemies.
Yeah.
And to suck us into one war after another in the Mideast.
Yeah.
I was not
this.
Campaigning as a National Socialist. I was campaigning as a Republican. Uh-huh. I was a campaign on the one issue that's on everybody's mind, and that's to avoid war in the Middle East.
Okay.
We need more wars.
Sure.
No, we don't need more wars.
Fine.
We need
I understand.
Jobs.
And you call the, you call, well, I don't even want to quote you, but here's the deal. Here, you can have your own conspiracy theories, but you can't have your own facts.
Not conspiracy theories, it's a
Mr.
fact.
Jones,
the Jews controlled basically the
country, Jews
the Congress,
were killed.
The economy,
Adolf
the
Hitler
media.
Perpetrated a genocide, the Auschwitz death camp existed, and the Nuremberg trial
poppycock.
Happened. Those are the
it's
facts,
poppycock.
Sir. Either way, here's it's the a, larger
it's
point.
A, it's a scam.
Fine,
here,
you're
here.
On the record.
Here's,
you've
here's
said
Ford's
that you don't
records,
believe
ma'am.
The Holocaust.
Ford's records of wow. Holocaust survivors are getting special Social Security
well,
benefits.
I'm glad
stop.
That you're...
Stop.
Wow.
Okay, so why did CNN have this on? They did not have it to expose him. They had it because, or to stop him. There is no chance of him winning. He is going to win the GOP primary because the GOP cannot field a single candidate to stand up with the platform, I'm not that guy. So he's going to win the nomination of the GOP party. He's running as a Republican. So why did CNN have him on? Not to stop him, but to show people that that's what conservatives are. That's what the GOP is. This is why we have to be the one. The people that should be having this man on is Fox News. The people that should be having him on, exposing him for who he is and making sure that everyone understands he is not a conservative, a national socialist. A socialist has nothing to do with the GOP. Well, I can't say that. A national socialist doesn't. I'm sure there's a few socialists in the GOP. That's the problem. The progressives started out as liberals, then they were progressive, and now they're taking the mask off and they are socialists. Because that's who they were when they were socialists and said, we can't do socialist. We can't say we're communist because that implies a revolution. So we want those same ideals, but we don't want a revolution on the street. So we'll call ourselves progressives. Wilson scared the crap out of people and progressive became a bad name. So FDR changed it to liberal. Once liberal was found to be communist-loving, socialist-loving, they had to change that to progressives, which means nothing until you get down to the real policies. And now they're taking off their mask and saying they're socialists. Republicans, have you been wearing a mask? Are you a national socialist? Because the national socialists are coming out. And I think the Republican Party and every conservative needs to say, that has nothing to do with me. I reject all of their ideas, not just the racial ideas, but the socialist ideas. That's important. Pat.
Yes, I agree with that, what you said.
You agree with the National Socialists?
No.
Oh, sorry.
The things Glenn was saying.
About them. Okay.
It's interesting because at that speech that she shows a little bit of, it says National Socialist right behind him. It's kind of hard to hide from that.
So. I know, but you notice everybody's just talking about his racism.
I know.
Nobody's talking about the socialism part.
I know.
We have to reject both of those.
And how did CNN handle it when we showed you who the Black Panthers were? Oh, stop it. There's only a few of them.
Yeah,
God,
you're right.
Come on. Mm-hmm. They got no power. But man, do they show the Nazis now?
Yeah.
Like they're the biggest group in America.
And the same thing will be said. We had a problem with the president having allies like the Black Panthers, giving them special passes and looking the other way when they would do things. Mm-hmm. We had a problem with that. Well, I'm consistent. I have a problem with people like Steve Bannon giving a pass to National Socialists. They're both radicals. Mm-hmm. No administration of the United States of America should give those guys any kind of special room on either side, period.
And from the beginning, we disavowed the Robert Spencers and
Richard, yeah.
And Richard Spencer.
You've disavowed him so much, you've changed his name.
I changed his name. That's how much. Yeah.
Well, this is his older brother who's far worse.
Oh, really? I don't know.
Yeah. And so I think we've been pretty consistent on that.
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, I mean, currently right now, the Philadelphia Eagles are in the middle of their parade, which is going down the same street where the guy said, I want to kill DaBabies, and I hate every iota of a cracker. The same exact street.
Wow.
And it's like, here we are. Like, at that time, the media wouldn't even draw any attention to those things. When we see people on the left were responsible for attempting to blow up a bridge in Ohio, there was almost
you can
other
say
than
that,
just a police report. There was basically no connection at all.
You could say that. You could say that. Did you know that Occupy Wall Street? They tried to blow up the main bridge in. It was Cleveland. Was it Cincinnati? I think it was Cleveland. I'm not sure. I think it was Cleveland. I'm making my own point.
Right.
Most people won't remember because it wasn't covered. It was Occupy Wall Street. So you had radicals in Occupy Wall Street, and you had government officials and Hollywood officials going down and being a part of that. And we said, that's not what you think it is. They didn't care. They didn't care. Can you imagine some government officials and Hollywood people going down and being a part of a American First party, and somebody saying, hey, you don't want to be there. Ah, you know what? You're crazy. Well, they would never do that. Why did they do it before? Because they don't care. It's all about winning. And anyone who tells you not to care about the Nazis or not to care about the Occupy Wall Street radicals that were there, they're lying to you. They're lying to you. Those are outliers.
I noticed you didn't mention the dangerous and violent Tea Party. I mean, with the zero arrests at their rallies and the fact that they left places cleaner than when they got there. I noticed you didn't mention that violent group.
Well, no, because none that
convenient. It's convenient,
Glenn.
Everybody knows. Yeah,
I mentioned
that's all they cared about was stupid things like targeting districts and all that. When on the other hand, they're ignoring actual violence.
Well, Berkeley.
Yeah.
They're not ignoring it. They are praising it. You have people on Capitol Hill that are praising the people that were burning and looting and breaking things in Berkeley, California.
Mm-hmm.
You have Donnie Deutsch coming out this week saying we need a revolution. And I don't mean a political revolution. We need people out in the streets. We need a revolution. This is tyranny. That guy's becoming a dictator. That, are you kidding me? I know what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking to me, I just said to Stu the other day, I'm having a really hard time. Is it what you're thinking?
It's an amazing struggle Glenn is going through, because all the things that you said for, you know, the past 10 years or whatever it was, you know, you're seeing the blatant hypocrisy by 90% of the media,
yeah,
who are now complaining about the same types of things you were complaining about.
And I'm still complaining about those same things. Now on our side.
On both sides, right?
It's both sides.
And they dismissed it before, and now all of a sudden they're all freaked out about it. And I can understand your instinct, right?
Oh,
to just want them to admit that for the past
decade.
But then your better angels, I guess, are trying to convince you in a terrible, losing battle that you maybe should just let that go.
Yeah. Yeah, so far I haven't.
It's hard, isn't it? It's hard.
I think this is what the big struggle in America is.
Yeah,
it's so hard. And you know, I said to a friend of mine, I said, and you know what? Right now, we went through this pain first, okay, under Obama, being spooked out of our mind and then being called all kinds of names, okay? Then Trump gets in. Now it's their turn.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going through this pain now, which is making it so much harder of really? Oh, really? Now you care?
Yeah.
Okay. That's only going to fester.
Now you're frightened?
Right.
Wait,
right.
When we said we were frightened,
right,
we were extremists and racists.
We were told to get over it. You guys had special classes, and some schools even let out the day after the election because everyone was so upset. Please don't start with me.
Oh.
So I have that festering, and I have to find a way to lance that, and we all do, because here's what's going to happen. They're behind us by 4 years or 8 years. They're going to say those things when their guy gets in and he's worse than this guy. They're going to come in and go, oh, really? Now you care? We have got
That's exactly what's
going to
happen.
Exactly right. And it's going to get much worse, much worse. And nobody's going to listen to each other. And everybody's just going to want to rip each other's heads off. And I'm trying to find a way where I can let that go.
It seems like you're winning the battle. What do you think,
Pat? Oh, yeah.
You're doing a good job with it.
I can feel the love tonight.
Okay. Markets are beginning to price for a potential interest rate hike in March. Another likely interest rate hike will happen in June. Yay. And then maybe we can get another one in December. How's your mortgage? Do you have a adjustable rate, or is it locked in? And if it's locked in, what is it locked in at right now? Right now, check your mortgage. It is so important to organize your finances so you can complete your new home purchase or your mortgage refi sooner rather than later. The lower interest rate you can lock into, the greater your savings every month. Right now is one of the last times to lock in historic interest rates. You can get started by calling the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. They work for you. That's why you get a straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. They don't work for a bank. They're working for you to get the lowest rate. American Financing, 800-906-2440. Call them at 800-906-2440. Check your mortgage. What are you paying? Do you have an adjustable? You want a refi? You want a new house? One place to go. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I got some comments on Pat's dance moves that we posted yesterday. You missed it. He may hate it, but he sure looks like he's practiced his moves. Vicky Johnston wrote in, I'm happy to see that Pat's back pain was not preventing him from busting a move. He did bust some other things. Jeanette, awesome moves, Pat. I can tell you you wanted to keep it up through the rest of the shoot. I don't know if that's true. Well, he might have, but the rest of us did. Oh, my gosh. We're just showing video of it now on the Blaze TV, and that's disturbing. Very disturbing.
A couple of other stories.
Yeah.
Bermuda has become the first country in the world to repeal same-sex marriage.
Yeah. So they didn't pass it. They were told by the EU that they, or Britain, that they had to.
And they, but they had it. I mean, it
yeah,
was
they
in
had
place.
It. Yes. And they just repealed it. It's a very conservative country.
Yeah. Have you ever been to Bermuda? Have you ever spent any time there?
Yes.
And it's a really, I mean, it's unbelievably nice.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful. A little weird, you know, dangerous with the triangle thing, but.
No, that's not a thing.
No, it's, well, no. I couldn't find
it. It sort of like closes down, I would say, at about 7 p.m.
Yes, it
There's
does.
Like nothing else going on.
Yes,
like,
it does.
Yeah, they're like, that's about mm-hmm. it. You can maybe go to a restaurant post 7 p.m.
Uh-huh.
Like, so I don't know. Maybe it's kind of, they are apparently a pretty conservative nation.
Yeah, that's very.
But they're keeping civil unions or something similar to that.
Yeah.
Just not actual.
Here's an idea. Marriage. Let's get the government out of marriage.
No,
entirely.
Glenn, it's,
then we won't have this
how
problem.
How will people know that they're married if the government doesn't tell them?
Because they're going to have their priest or their, you know, judge or whoever can say you're married. Get them out of the marriage business. That's
Glenn,
the way to make everybody
Mercury
work together.